Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
This episode is also brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768. Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of the Canby Current. My name is James Walton. Let's read the news. While Canby, which is home to Republican State Senator Alan Olson, House Republican leader Christine Drazen, and other past politicians that have typically repped the GOP, while it has a well-earned reputation as a conservative stronghold amidst an increasingly urban and progressive region, the demographics reveal a more complicated picture. Registered Republicans still outnumber Democrats in the city of Canby, but it is by a mere 750 voters, 4,295 to 3,542, according to the numbers provided to the Current by the County Elections Office this week. The largest block in Canby, interestingly, is those who don't adhere to either party. There are almost as many non-affiliated voters in Canby as there are Democrats, 3,528. And when one adds to the mix registered independents, 616, libertarians, 77, and other third parties, 132, the result is slightly larger than even the number of registered Republicans, 4,353. So it boils down to a complex battleground for local politicians seeking office. Although the seats on the Canby City Council, whose candidates met for the first and only time in a virtual forum this week, and the Canby School Board are officially nonpartisan, the races this year are taking place in a political climate that has become increasingly partisan and divided. A large number of non-affiliated voters in Canby presents opportunities for candidates who lean to either side. The Canby School District, an area that includes Canby city limits but also many square miles of the surrounding rural countryside, is much more solidly red. Republicans outnumber registered Democrats by more than 2,000 voters, 8,900 to 6,700. Unlike in Canby, the GOP is the district's largest registered voting bloc, outnumbering not only the Dems but also non-affiliated 6,415, independents 1,170, and third parties 391, which total up altogether to 7,976. Countywide, however, the pendulum swings the other way. The Democrats enjoy a wide 106,321 to 87,185 majority, with another huge block of non-affiliateds. Independents and third parties, 114,903, just to make things interesting. 4 years ago, Donald Trump won this city by a margin almost exactly equal to the difference in registered Republicans versus Democrats that we see today. He garnered 3,946 votes, 734 more than his Democratic challenger, Hillary Clinton, who had 3,212 ballots cast in her name. The Canby School District was solidly Trump country in the last election, with both candidates pulling in non-affiliated voters and independents to garner more ballots than might be predicted based solely on the registration rolls. President Trump brought home 10,964 votes to Clinton's 7,906. On the Clinton-Kane ticket, on the other hand, that took Clackamas County 102,000 to 88,000. Canby Police and the Canby Fire District are investigating a small fire that was deliberately set outside a rear exit door at Eccles Elementary School late Sunday afternoon. The CFD responded to the reported fire at the school on Northwest 5th Avenue at approximately 4:53 p.m. The fire was set at a rear door near the playground. According to a district representative who met a Now Hear This Canby reporter at the door, the suspect or suspects appeared to have tied some sort of fabric around the handle and lit it on fire. Small charred pieces of fabric could still be seen. The exterior of the steel door was badly burned, but still in working order. No injuries and no other damage were reported. We were lucky, the district staff member Doug Reichen said at the scene. This could have been a lot worse. The Canby Police Department also responded to the incident and are investigating, as is Canby Fire. Canby Police Lieutenant Jose Gonzalez tells us that investigators are treating this case as deliberate arson. No suspect or suspects have yet been identified, but detectives are pursuing several leads. Canby's Spooktacular Village has been nixed this year, replaced with a contactless trunk-or-treat event at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. But if more traditional downtown trick-or-treating is what you crave, you might find what you're looking for in neighboring Aurora. Though located barely 5 minutes away from Canby down Highway 99E, Aurora is the much smaller community that lies in a different county, that's Marion County, which has entered the second phase of the governor's COVID-19 reopening plan and has somewhat lighter restrictions where the virus is concerned. Aurora's downtown core of antique dealers and quaint shops, including the brand new Blue Alley Salon and Gift Shop, will be passing out treats to trick-or-treaters from 3 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, October 31st. If you'd like to visit the old Aurora Colony before then, there's more October fun in store. The Shops of Aurora also hold a scarecrow contest each fall, and it's now underway. There are two ways to vote. Stop by and snap a photo of your favorite scarecrow, then post the picture on Instagram using the hashtag AuroraScarecrow, or vote by posting it on Facebook with the name and number of your favorite scarecrow. And the contest runs through Halloween. The famous Aurora Colony Quilt Show has also chosen to go forward for its 48th year. It is being presented in a new format that allows only small groups at a time to check out this year's selection of the rarely seen Aurora Colony quilts. This year's theme is 2020 Visions of Joy. Times are available from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Thursday, October 15th through Sunday, October 18th. Call for your slot at 503-678-5754 or get advance tickets online at www.auroracolony.org. Two wildfires that devastated large swaths of Clackamas, Marion, and Linn counties are both more than two-thirds contained, fire officials reported this week. The Riverside Fire, which had burned more than 138,000 acres in Clackamas County, is reported at 72% contained. Beachy Creek, which has also destroyed almost 200,000 acres, is 81% contained. Both fires have more than 200 personnel assigned to them, far below peak levels in early to mid-September when both conflagrations were raging and prompted thousands of residents to flee their homes. At Riverside, firefighters are continuing fire suppression repairs as needed and patrolling and monitoring the fire line. At Beachy Creek, the area is too wet for mechanical equipment, so hand crews and engines are continuing repair work where it is safe and appropriate to engage, according to Incident Command. Showers are predicted to persist throughout this week, with rain amounts expected to total another inch in the fire areas. Ridgetop may receive wind speeds of 20 miles per hour with gusts of up to 25 to 30. Fire behavior is anticipated to be minimal due to the recent precipitation. New resources were deployed to Riverside this week to replace Canadian firefighters that returned home Sunday. Fire-weakened trees remain a concern with incoming winds and rain. Crews on the ground will be watchful of possible landslides or erosion that might pose a safety hazard. The public is asked to be vigilant near any burned areas. The Marion County Board of Commissioners has approved the first phase of a massive overhaul of the Donald Aurora Interchange on Interstate 5. Although the plan was to break the nearly $80 million project into two parts because of a lack of funding, was not well received by the commissioners, they pointed out the pressing need for safety improvements at one of the area's most dangerous intersections and concluded that even the first phase would be better than nothing. The county's approval means that the plan will now go before the Oregon Transportation Commission, likely in December. If it is given the green light, opening bids for Phase 1 would be expected in November 2021, with construction slated for 2022 and 2023. The preferred concept is a diverging diamond interchange, a design pioneered in France that would require overpass traffic to briefly switch over to the wrong side of the road. Such interchanges are designed to improve safety by eliminating the need for left turns. In executing the concept at Aurora Donald Interchange, the Oregon Department of Transportation plans to construct a new I-5 bridge, realign the current travel lanes on I-5, lengthen and widen the north and southbound entrance and exit ramps, and realign Ellen and Bence Road and Dolores Way. The existing interchange was built 60 years ago and designed to handle the traffic of that day when its closest neighbors were a handful of quiet farms. Today is the access point for three busy truck stops as well as an RV park and sees approximately 32,000 vehicles per day. ODOT officials admit the interchange has been over capacity at peak times for many years. The transportation agency has acknowledged it has significant safety issues and does not operate like a busy interchange should. The first phase will come at an estimated cost of $50 million and is fully funded, with the lion's share coming from House Bill 2017, the so-called Keep Oregon Moving package. Phase 2 has a $29 million price tag and is still in search of a funding source. An ODOT senior planner told commissioners last week that if the project had been done in one shot instead of two parts, it could have been realized for only $71 million. That's a savings of $8 million.
Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows,
no.
You know?
No. I mean, like, transparent as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah. Which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers. And they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
All right, on the Canby conversation today, we're going to be talking some Canby Fire District stuff, and we have two representatives of our amazing fire district here. We have Austin Holmes. He is a firefighter and paramedic and also the local representative of our local union of firefighters here. Is that right?
That's correct.
Hi, Austin. Welcome back with the Now Here This Canby.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
And we also have Matt Dale, who's the division chief of the paramedics unit for Canby Fire District. Hi, Chief.
Hi, good morning. Or good afternoon.
Thank you both for joining us. So just to be clear here, we're going to be talking about the levy that's going to be on the November ballot this year. It's a levy renewal. and a few other things related to the fire district as well. When it comes to voting issues, obviously, Chief, you are currently on duty here, so you're going to be sharing information, but not making sort of a campaign statements or things like that. Is that right?
That's correct. Public employees on the job are restricted under Oregon election law from spending time or money persuading voters. So yeah. I'll just be presenting factual information.
Sure. And then Austin, you're currently off duty, so you will be sharing a little bit more of your personal opinion and why you feel that this is important and a little more persuasive, I guess.
Correct. Yeah, I'll be a little bit more of opinion on my approach with it and how I feel personally and how, you know, a lot of our workforce employees feel based on how this would affect us. So.
Absolutely, which is going to be appreciated as well. Just wanted to make clear and so nobody gets in trouble here or whatever. So
thank you. Yes.
Why don't you start, Chief Dale, and just give us, I know you have a short little presentation, if you will, but just to kind of set the stage a little bit for what's going to be before voters on November 3rd.
Yeah, thanks, Tyler. Canby Fire District is the provider for the Canby Fire area, including Barlow Road. Or the community of Barlow. Our fire district extends 54 square miles from the Willamette River out to Bernards Road. We do fire suppression, public education, and also provide ambulance service, as we've done for 71 years now. Our mission is to prevent or to provide highly skilled, efficient response in medical, ambulance, and fire emergencies while working with our community to prevent and prepare for the next emergency. Mm. So what we do, basically, is 68% of everything we do is medical. Mm-hmm. And the rest of that is fire response. Medical being a large part of that, and for Canby Fire, that includes ambulance transport. Mm-hmm. Over the last 20 years now, Canby Fire has seen a tremendous amount of growth in population, and mm-hmm. with that follows call volume.
Yeah, sure.
So this last year, we ran 2,999 calls, 68% mm-hmm. of those being medical, requiring...
Almost 10 a day.
Yep, yeah. Almost 10 a day, requiring transport to local hospitals by ambulance. Mm-hmm. And each one of those ambulance transports takes about an hour and a half on average, that ambulance out of the district to respond and transport and return.
Sure, because we don't have a hospital here.
That's true.
Yeah.
We do that with currently 16 firefighters and three chiefs, two division chiefs, myself and my counterpart, and then the fire chief. So I'd kind of like to go over what we're working on right now. Mm-hmm. There was a bond, which is different from the levy.
Yes, that was going to be a question. So go ahead and explain that if people are confused. Didn't we just have a fire a couple years ago?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So what we're going to ask, what'll be before the voters on November 3rd, is the renewal levy, which is it's been in place for the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And this is just a renewal. What the voters passed in 2018 was a bond, and the bond does not go towards any people.
Right.
It only goes towards buildings and fire trucks.
Right.
And one of the larger elements of that bond is the placement of the Northside Station, fire station, and it'll be near the city, Canby City Shops, off of Territorial and North Redwood. Mm-hmm. And that's in process right now.
Right. So like a bond could buy a fire engine, but it can't buy the gas to run it.
That's true.
Yeah, the people to put on it, maybe.
Right.
So it's, buildings, equipment, and then apparatus is all fair game, but no personnel.
Yeah,
so.
And that's confusing to people, right? I think a lot of people think taxes are taxes, bonds, levies, it's all the same stuff, and it's not. I mean, it's very strictly defined in our laws. So.
Very strictly defined. So what this levy renewal that our fire board, our elected five-member fire board, put before the voters again is to renew the five-year levy that's expiring this year to maintain six firefighter EMTs and paramedics on the clock 24 hours a day, and that is part of what makes up that 16 person cadre of firefighter EMT paramedics. Mm-hmm. So what that levy renewal is specifically is 45 cents per thousand, same as it continues and it has been. That expires in 2021. If that levy was to not pass by the voters, that would eliminate six jobs. What that does for us as a fire district is it prevents us from responding as efficiently as we do. As the EMS chief, I can tell you our numbers, our response numbers, both in times that it takes us to respond from the fire station to an emergency incident and get turned around and handle consecutive emergencies, we're well within, we have some of the best times in the county. If we lost those positions, it would delay or hamper us from responding to additional emergencies that that occur simultaneously with others, which happens about a third of the time. And we would be waiting for apparatus, ambulances, and or fire trucks from neighboring communities instead. So that 45 cents per thousand, it equates into about $112 a year for the average property at assessed, and that's the tax assessment, not what the value of the home is. Of $250,000, so that's $112 per year. That's a total tax assessment of all combined with bonds and the levy and the permanent tax rate of $1.99 per thousand, which is in line with or less than it's about 30 cents cheaper per thousand than other Clackamas County agencies, or in line with that.
Just since we started talking about like total tax rate and things like that, I don't know who is best to take this, but having the performance that you guys do and the level of staffing that you're able to provide, both in terms of fire and, I don't know, maybe medical as well, that ends up having a positive rate on like insurance rates and things in our area. Isn't that correct?
It does. Yeah. Thank you. You want to talk about that?
I can. Yeah, so a few years ago we did a re-rate with ISO, which is directly correlated with people's insurance ratings, whether that be their home or their businesses in town here. And we have gotten some incredible lower ratings than what we've had in the past due to the way we've increased our staffing, which when we passed this levy the first time, which 5 years ago we increased it. So with doing that, we've been able to get numbers significantly lower, which in turn dropped people's insurance premiums. So if we, in turn, if we kind of go backwards in time, if we were to lose this levy, lose personnel, then all those ratings we wouldn't be able to accomplish, but we would have a decrease in staffing. So
a good chance you might end up paying that $112 back in higher
Very, very much so, likely, if not more, especially if you're a business.
Tyler, if you don't mind, I want to talk about our very important part of our organization also, because we've talked a lot about our career members, is our volunteers. So CANBY, as you're aware, is a combination department where we have career and volunteer firefighters. Volunteers, we'll maintain our volunteers. We're not going to get rid of the volunteers. However, the volunteer firefighters also, by the sheer nature of being a volunteer, have careers outside of the fire service and oftentimes outside of the fire district that prevents them from responding during the week, which is why it's so important for this fire district, as with many others, to have career firefighters that are able to respond 24 hours a day that are at the station. The volunteers do a tremendous job for CANBY, but are limited in their ability and availability to respond to the sheer number of emergencies that CANBY does, being about the fourth busiest fire station in Clackamas County. It's a large demand of service of people's free time. So specifically, this levy will most negatively impact career people and the service that, that they provide with that ambulance and the staffed fire truck. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that when the voters passed this levy, well, they renewed this levy. It was first passed in 2003, mm-hmm. And has been renewed every 3 to 5 years since. There was one increase, and that was last time, and I believe we went from 37 or 39, it was 39 cents to 45 cents mm-hmm. per thousand. What that did was it added 2 additional firefighters for that total of 6. Mm-hmm. It allowed the fire district to staff 24 hours a day, the second ambulance. Mm-hmm. That alone, statistically, what we've experienced is instead of waiting for ambulances from outside our community for the sick and injured within Canby, mm-hmm. On average, we wait 2 times a month now instead of about 15 times a month for a second ambulance mm-hmm. from outside the city. And as everybody is aware, you know, it's kind of a drive mm-hmm. to get to Canby, especially yeah. when you have an emergency.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
And I think that's kind of my presentation as far okay. as the levy and the history of the fire district. Austin, what do yeah. you, did I miss something here?
No, that all sounded really good.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I'd love to hear from you, Austin, and give you a chance to chat a little bit, but just what would the impact be if the fire district lost this levy, or why are you really hoping that folks do consider voting for this?
Yeah, I just want to make sure people are completely clear on how big of a detriment this would be to the community if we were to not pass this. with how much we've increased with call volume, like when I started here in 2012, it was the first time we've ever broke 2,000 calls, and now last year we're at 3,000. So in a not that long amount of time, we've increased exponentially. And
yeah.
now we are currently keeping up, but we're just getting busier too. So
yeah.
in the future, we need to be looking at more people, not going the other way and going less.
Yeah.
And with how busy we are, if we were to not pass this levy and lose those positions, we would only really be staffing one ambulance at that point. And with how busy we are, you pretty much have to assume that that ambulance is going to be gone most of the time, all day, all night.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to be that one ambulance trying to keep up with 3,000 calls a year.
Right.
And whether that's taking people to Oregon City Hospital or into Portland if it's something more severe. So sometimes one call can be 4 hours long.
Right. Yeah.
So with that being said, when you have your 3 firefighters per day and 2 of them are gone in Portland, if something happens to you or you have a fire or something, there's one person here in
yeah.
town, and that is not good odds
yeah.
for getting help when you need it.
Right.
So that's the kind of stuff people need to be aware of what kind of service they're actually going to get if this were to not pass,
yeah.
which would
yeah.
be terrible.
No, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, we talk a lot about it, and in some ways it is true. Canby's a small town, you know, but
yeah.
it's also not that small. And
right.
yeah, to think that if I needed an ambulance and there was only one,
uh-huh.
you know, on duty, yeah, I would not expect that it would just be there waiting for me. I would
yeah.
think that it would, there's very likely that it'd be helping somebody else at that time.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to keep in mind,
and
too,
it's not
is
just the city, it's the whole district.
It's the whole district,
the,
yeah,
yeah,
which is quite large.
Yeah.
And then we also have a lot of neighboring agencies that rely on us for mutual aid too.
Mm-hmm.
So our ambulance not only responds to calls here, but we can move into Woodburn, Hubbard, Aurora, Monitor, both with fire and EMS response. So if we were to lose positions with our mutual aid agreements, at that point we're not really fulfilling our end of the bargain with mutually aiding someone else if we're just the ones needing help all the time. So
yeah. Yeah.
It's really part of a lot bigger of a picture that we play with everyone.
Yeah.
So it's super important. And then the other thing is, I think we provide some of the best service, period, to anyone.
Yeah.
We really pride ourselves on excellent EMS response, specifically with our ambulance. So I think as far as people getting bang for their buck with their money, with getting us as an ambulance response, I feel it's a superior level of service that people expect and they want. And without passing this levy, that's going to go away significantly, and we're going to be getting private ambulance, stuff like that. Where for us, I mean, we see people on a regular basis. We get to know them. You know, we know their conditions, and we really kind of give a one-on-one experience, and I would hate for that to go away.
Yeah, it's interesting timing for this, right?
It is, it is.
2020, obviously, the year of COVID, which is, you know, for the EMT side of what you do and the large number of medical calls, Chief Dale, that you guys do, that's been a big impact, obviously. And then even more recently, the wildfires, which was the other aspect of what you do. When you talk about, that this would mean the loss of 6 jobs, I mean, that's not, those are real people that just helped our community through those 2 unprecedented things. And that would be, you know, obviously a slap in the face to them and the service they provided, but also just that loss of experience, right?
That's
going to be serve you guys well in the future, even if hopefully we don't have another year like this for some time. But
Yeah, and I think that's what this year has really shown us is we've been busier and providing more service than ever, at least that I've seen in my career so far here. So, I mean, if this year's shown one thing, it's we need a legitimate fire and EMS response here, especially with everything going on. And we've been doing that and stepping up to the plate and working our butts off. And we're just asking, please let us continue to keep doing that, you know.
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing that up, Tyler, about the recent events, not only the COVID-19 pandemic, but the recent conflagration and wildfires. I would like to thank the public on behalf of the fire district for the amount of support that we've received. As you know, we're very involved with many different facets of our community, all kinds of public events. We're in our schools. We're doing building inspections and walkthroughs and preparing for, you know, all types of incidents, whether it's a hazardous material release from a train in town or something in our large developing business area or in a residence. And during these recent events, we've had people in our community that have came out and offered thanks, verbally, written, provided in-kind supplies, donations, food, water, offers of assistance. And it's very heartfelt by every member of our career and volunteer staff, every member here. And so very sincerely, thank you to Canby for that.
Yeah, well, obviously, I'm sure you guys are sick of hearing it by now, but thank you for everything that you did. And yeah, I mean, just when I was, you know, obviously not a firefighter and wasn't on the front lines, but seen so many pictures, and I just can't imagine, you know, seeing something like the Riverside Fire or even, you know, some of the quote-unquote smaller ones that were a little bit closer to like Malala and Estacada, and seeing that and running toward that rather than away. Just the courage and the selflessness that you guys and our neighboring district showed through that. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the trust in us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's wrap things up. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to talk about or share?
I think I've kind of said my spiel on it. If you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them for you, but that's kind of my piece.
Yeah. Is there a website or somewhere that people, if they have questions, can ask or just hit you guys up on Facebook, things like that?
Yes. Canby Fire. So our website is canbyfire.org. And we have information pertaining to this levy, as we discussed here, posted on our website. We're also available to come out and speak at community groups, as we've done and are doing it different groups throughout town. And if you have a group and you'd like us to speak, probably virtually at this point, we'd be happy to make a presentation on this so we can help answer any questions. You can also give us a call. Our phone number is on Google, but it's also 266-5851. So I appreciate your letting us come on and talk to you today, Tyler. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you guys both for being on.
Yeah, thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with 3 realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, now we're joined on Now Here's This Canby by Magda Marino with Bridging Cultures Canby. Joined once again. Hi, Magda. Welcome back.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Hi. How are you holding up?
Doing the best we can.
Yeah. It's been a challenge this year, hasn't it, for many organizations that serve less fortunate folks and hunger and poverty and all that, unemployment has been a rising issue for many in our area this year.
Yes, and it's been a blessing to be part of an organization that is just involved in helping any way we can. So it's been a blessing to see so many people also reaching out and connecting with the community.
Yeah, for Bridging Cultures, obviously you guys are dedicated to, bridging cultures between our Anglo and our Latinx communities here in the Canby area. But really, since you first started, that has often been through food and through community dinners and things like that. And as we mentioned, food has been a real challenge for a lot of folks, including people in our area. Have you seen a greatly increased need this year since the pandemic hit?
Yes. And that's actually how the program started, because we saw the need, and the county had, it wasn't as easy for them to connect with our families, so we decided that we could help, and we started helping by delivering food boxes to families in the community.
Okay, so you started that this year?
Yes.
Okay, where do you get the food from?
From the county. It's from Clackamas County.
Okay.
And it's the food that they would deliver to a food bank, or a food bank sometimes will pick it up from them. And they wanted to have a place here in Canby. And we started volunteering and helping out, and then we saw the need to help families get to the food. And it wasn't so easy for families to get to the food because a lot of families don't have a car, so
sure,
they couldn't just pull up and open the trunk to get the car,
yeah,
to get the food in the car.
That's true. So, I didn't think about that, but the Canby Center this year, it wasn't how they used to do it, but with COVID this year, they transitioned to a drive-through food service, and the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank at St. Patrick's also does a drive-through service. I didn't realize how that is prohibitive to a family that may not have a vehicle or have access to a vehicle.
And that's where we come in, because we noticed that a lot of our families were not able to access the food because they don't have a vehicle. Sometimes they don't drive, sometimes different reasons. Sometimes they're working at the time that the food bank is open, so they couldn't get to it.
Sure, that makes sense. So how many people have you been serving through those food box deliveries?
It's been a little over 100 families per week.
Wow.
So we have actually two different routes. So we are serving a little over 200 families each month. But in order to be able to do this, we alternate. So we serve the families twice a month.
That's cool. And that's all here in Canby?
Yes. Yeah, we only do it in Canby at the moment.
Yeah, sure. Cool. Well, there was some recent news, again, from the county, a grant that Bridging Cultures received to purchase a van to assist with these deliveries. I guess you guys have just been doing them from your own cars or things like that?
Yes. I've been blessed to have my husband helping out as well with his truck and a few other volunteers. Amazing. A couple of teachers from the school district have been stepping up and helping out. Charlie, who is our Bridging Cultures president, has been helping out. So he's been huge. We had so many wonderful people helping out. But it's getting cold and it's beginning to rain.
Yeah.
And the food is beginning to get wet. The food boxes being cardboard. Can't really stay in the rain for too long.
Right, right. That's the one thing about a truck is it's got all that space, but it's open air most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Cool. So do you have the van yet, or do you have to get the grant money first?
We were informed that we got the grant, so we have the grant, and that's going to be used to help us buy the truck.
Okay.
Nice, fully covered.
That's great.
So we can use it for the food delivery. We're in the process of buying one.
Cool.
Hopefully it'll be soon. And we do food deliveries every Wednesday. I think it's going to be sunny this Wednesday. I'm excited.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, because the rains are here, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And it's fun. We got to deliver food in the rain. A couple of weeks ago, we were soaking wet.
Okay.
So with the food, but families were excited to see us. A couple of people offer us umbrellas, so it was really nice to see the love from the community.
That's great. That's great. I wanted to ask you, Magda, just how does it feel to, I mean, obviously, anyone who volunteers or even, you know, is able to donate to a charitable cause, you know, you get that good feeling of helping. But to actually see and, you know, share a few words or a few moments with folks that you're giving such direct and important help to, how does that feel for you and the other volunteers that are able to take part in this effort?
It's a huge blessing. It's a wonderful experience. I was thanking one of my volunteers, and she was telling me that it's one of the favorite parts of her day because she gets to be out and connecting with the community. And it's not only the food, but it's also about connection, especially with the difficult times that we're having right now. We are missing out on that connection. Charlie would cut flowers in the morning. So a lot of times we'll also deliver flowers to mom when we're doing the food boxes. And the flowers is something that we used to do in the picnics at the park during the summer. Since we didn't get to do that this year, that's part of why we decided to help out with the food delivery, because it's a way of still connecting with the community. So it's wonderful to see families getting so excited for the food and moms getting excited for receiving flowers. One of my volunteers was telling me that one of the moms was so happy to get the flowers, and she mentioned that it was her birthday and that she hadn't had flowers in so many years, so that's even more special.
Oh, wow, that is super special. So that's your president, Charlie Gingrich. He cuts flowers from his farm and makes them into bouquets that they go out to some of these folks?
Yes.
Okay. Wow, that's so cool.
It is, and I try sometimes to give the flowers to the little kids and ask them to give them to their moms. So it's super cute to see little kids grabbing the flowers and giving them to their moms.
That is
so those are the little moments that make it more special.
Sure, sure. Great. Well, Magda, thanks so much for doing this service to folks in our community, this critical work. And yeah, congratulations on the grant. I'm glad it's going to be put to good use and help keep food dry in our. It'd be a shame to have this food donated and then it gets ruined by the rain or whatever. So.
Well, it's a huge blessing, and I'm very blessed to also have great volunteers and the support from the county. So it's definitely team effort.
Absolutely. Thank you, Magda.
Thank you.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. Miss going to the Wild Hare. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.